So, hi everyone. I'm Jean. I am the director of the Trans Tech Tent, CBC. But that's not what I'm here to talk to you about today. I'm here to talk to you about why smartwatches are dumber than you think, which will perhaps inevitably devolve into peeling back the shiny veneer of tech innovation to reveal the deep-seated dysfunction of capitalism underneath. I hope you're ready. Thank you for indulging me. I'm very proud of my transition. Now, I'm sure many of you saw the title and thought, well, yeah, obviously, duh. And you wouldn't be wrong, but smartwatches have actually been around in some form or another for a good 10 years longer than smartphones, which I think is pretty cool. In fact, the first commercially available mobile phone, period, that just did calls, launched the same year as the first smartwatch. The waters are a little muddy. But again, that's pretty cool. Over recent years, though, as smartphones have grown in function and ubiquity, smartwatches have kind of had to pivot functionality to stay relevant. And we're going to explore that. But first off, a brief history of smartwatches. I have some interesting examples for you. So like I say, the concept of the smartwatch is quite a bit older than the concept of the smartphone, in terms of technology at least. So the first smartwatches released in around 1983. There were a few that were all launched around the same time. But the first smartphone was 11 years later in 1994, and that's called the IBM Simon, if anyone wants to go look it up. It's basically just a PDA with a mobile phone attached. In the early 1980s, Seiko released a number of watches, which we nowadays would consider smartwatches, but back in the day, they called computer watches, one of which is pictured here on the left. It's the Seiko Data 2000 from 1983. So with this one, you wirelessly attached it to that little keyboard there, and you could type in your memos and your appointments and things, and you could even use it as a calculator so that all the computation was done on the watch, which sounds cool, but also they'd had computer watches since like the mid-70s, so it wasn't really that impressive, but I think it's very cool. Unfortunately, they are hundreds of pounds as collector's items, so out of my price range. But as technology kind of moved on, smartwatches began to more closely follow the functionality of PDAs, if you're old enough or nerdy enough to remember what those were, where you basically sync them to a PC with a cable, and then they'd move all of your appointments and things from your calendar across. But in 1998, our friends at Seiko again launched what I'm comfortable calling the grandfather of the modern smartwatch. Pictured in the middle here is the Reputa, which was in the US known as the Matsucom on-hand PC. Now this had a 16-bit 3.6 megahertz processor. Doesn't sound a lot, but it's 1998. 120K each of RAM and ROM, up to 4 megabytes of storage, and a crispy 102x64 monochrome display. And it even came in two colors. You get that cool clear case, because it was the 90s, and we all had that cool clear case tech. And I imagine back in the day, it was incredible to have something almost as powerful as an IBM PC on your wrist, like less than 20 years later than that release. But unfortunately, it was all controlled with that little joystick nub underneath, and every review I can find said it controlled horribly. It was completely unwieldy, and it never caught on, but they sold it for like a decade. So the Reputa is the grandfather of the modern smartwatch. The IBM watchpad here is what I would consider the father. It's a prototype, but it's running a combo of Linux 2.2 and X11 R6. And its input methods are a touchscreen and then a little roller wheel at the top right there, which honestly isn't that different to how you control a modern smartwatch. It had an infrared sensor, which I think it used for data transfer, because they loved doing that back in the day, but they didn't specify. It also had radio. And later, they did a watchpad 1.5, which had an accelerometer, vibration motor, fingerprint reader, calendar, Bluetooth, you know, all the bells and whistles that modern smartwatches have. But from what I can tell, despite collaborating with watchmaker Citizen, they never actually properly released the watchpad as a product, which is a shame. They just had a few test markets at Japanese universities, to my knowledge. So, unfortunately, the inevitable march forward of technology happened, and we were confronted with modern smartwatches. Now, of course, PDAs went the way of the dinosaur once smartphones could do all the things they did, but in a smaller form factor. So smartwatches kind of lost a lot of their selling points. But they still followed that same kind of design philosophy that came with the watch pad. You know, they've got a big touch screen, some of the buttons, bits and pieces. My first smartwatch was that one in the top left, the Samsung Gear 2. It had a camera. It was a really bad camera. It also made a very obnoxious, like, shutter sound effect whenever you clicked it, which, in hindsight, pretty good so you can't creep on people in public. However, with the invention of using green light to detect heart rate instead of the typical red light, which increases accuracy in like non-perfect conditions, but also doesn't work well if you're not white. Thanks, Silicon Valley. Smartwatches could start pivoting into new functionality that smartphones couldn't as easily provide, that being the health monitor. Now, I say couldn't as easily provide because I had a Galaxy S8 that had a little health monitor, like heart rate monitor thing on the back. It was like on the other side of the camera to the fingerprint reader. And it was terrible. Barely worked because you had to keep your finger like perfectly still for it to work. But, you know, this does my heart rate great? We'll get to that. Now, smartwatches can track how far you walk in a day, how many calories you burn during exercise, if you're standing up enough, even if you're sleeping properly. So now we've got the robots to fat shame us, and we pay them to do it. But with all things created under capitalism, there is a constant need to improve and innovate in order to keep selling products. After all, if you don't invent anything new, eventually the market dries up, which is, I believe, one of the contributing factors to the stock market crash in 1929. But for the purpose of this presentation, we're going to focus in on this one in the middle, which is the Apple Watch, because I bought one and I feel like I got ripped off and I want to make it everyone else's problem. So how did our friends at Apple decide they were going to innovate in the health device market? Well, with their fourth iteration, Apple decided it was time for a big new feature, something to wow the crowds. So, September 2018, they have a press release come out, their new flagship watch. It's gonna come with an electrocardiogram feature, or ECG, approved by the FDA, no less. So with just a short hold of your finger to your wrist, like this, 30 seconds, you could generate an ECG, which usually requires a bunch of sensors to be stuck all over your chest at the doctor's office. I very much hope none of you have ever had to have one of these, but if you have, you know they have to stick these little stickers on you and then plug all these cables into you, and it's a huge pain in the ass, and it requires a lot of specialist equipment. Great. Now the technology is more accessible, except your average person doesn't know how to interpret the output of an ECG. So to give an example, that's what an ECG looks like. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. So the average person with no medical training has absolutely no idea what their fancy new watch is showing them. So you need a way of interpreting that output for the user. So, you know, you need to have a way of algorithmically working out what this means, whether or not you're healthy. Because you can't have doctors look at everyone's data, because not only would it take way too long, the amount of data and stuff, but you just need someone to look at it and say, eh, it's fine, to everything except like the most obvious issues, and then maybe tell you to lose some weight. Well, they got the second part down, so first part should be pretty easy, right? So to make this device marketable, and also get the FDA approval in the first place, to sell a medical device, that there are actually laws about these things. They needed to gather some real-world data on how people with heart problems and not heart problems show up on an ECG and then test how their algorithm works. And that means research, baby! And they published it on their website. not in like the Lancet or Heart or like any medical journal. It's just a PDF on apple.com. I didn't actually find it from their website. I found it on an indexed Google search. So you'll have to take my word that it's vaguely laid out like a published study, because going through page by page would be incredibly long and incredibly boring, and neither of us want that. So instead, we're going to skip to the interesting bits. Now, firstly, their title here is a little misleading. So, you know, start as you mean to go on, right? Because their detection algorithm is only designed to look for one type of arrhythmia. It's called atrial fibrillation, or AFib. Now, in their marketing for the ECG function, they do specify, but then later on, they go on and say that it detects arrhythmias plural, not singular. Which is great. And when I talk about marketing, I'm going to be referring to the Series 6, which is this one, because one, it's the one I bought, and two, it's the oldest one where I can still find the store page on Apple's website that hasn't been archived, because they sell this one refurbished still. They don't sell 4 and 5, so we get to look at the improved version of their ECG algorithm. It's still not great. So before we dig into their main fudging numbers and hiding things, I wanted to quickly go over something that comes up a lot in this document, which is something I like to call specific non-specificity. So for example, here, they don't, like this is a direct quote from the document. They don't actually give you any information on the ethnicities or the ages or anything about the kind of people who they tested, which you would think wouldn't give the game away at all, right? No one could copy your research based on that, but that's why I assume they have obfuscated and not given a lot of information. There are quite a few places where I have to just go, they don't tell us how they did this. And I assume that it's just because the only people they want to be able to verify their research is the FDA. They don't want this to be repeatable by anyone in a lab, because then that person could compete with them on the market, and then that's lost profits. So, not that kind of lost profits. So, when they go out of their way to release these kind of things from the public, they nix everything that could possibly be used to copy their work, save that from any possibility of competition, which is a shame, because I actually wanted to know how they get the watch to come up with an answer. Because like you saw the line, I want to know how it works out, what that means. Like, I'm sure it's really interesting, like the way it interprets the data from the sensors, but they don't mention it at all. They just say that this is what they did. I'd also like to bring attention to, they only had about, at most, maybe 625 people who had heart arrhythmias on there as their initial test batch data. They do say around 2,500 participants for this one. And later on, we'll see that that usually is a lower bound, rounded up quite a bit. So here, hope your heart works, because we see a breakdown of non-AFib arrhythmias and how their arrhythmia detection algorithm handles them. And as you can see, it's not great. Now, I can understand why it only detects one, right? Because if you can come up with a device that you put on your wrist and with 2-point ECG and 30 seconds, it can detect like 9 different kinds of arrhythmias. That's not something you sell to people for like £300 on the high street. That's something you sell to every hospital in the world for like 6 figures each. You know, it's out of scope for something like this. But it's a little concerning to see just how many arrhythmias it just doesn't know how to handle, and it just doesn't tell the user that anything possibly could be wrong. Because that implies that someone who may have one of these conditions, and an Apple Watch, might refrain from seeing a doctor because their fancy watch says it's fine. Because, like, you've all seen the news stories about the NHS and how long wait times are, how over capacity A&E is. And the thing is that when you call 111 about heart issues, they tell you to go to A&E. So you want to avoid that. You want to, you know, be a good citizen, not put strain on things. But how did they test it? How did they do it? How do they gather their data? Well, they start off with a null hypothesis. So they assume that it's no better than a coin flip, basically. That this thing doesn't work unless it meets specific performance goals in two areas, sensitivity and specificity. So sensitivity is how many times it correctly identifies positive diagnoses. So a higher sensitivity equals a lower amount of false negatives. And their performance goal for this one was over 90% with a 95% confidence interval lower bound. They don't actually tell us how they calculate the confidence interval, just the like technique they use, which is just great. And specificity is how many correct negative diagnoses. So a higher specificity is a lower amount of false positives. And they have a performance goal of over 92% with the same confidence interval. And you want this one to be higher, obviously, because you don't want to be telling people they're sick when they're not, because then you end up wasting resources that could have gone to someone who is sick. And these terms are very important because they are specific. They mean a very exact thing. And Apple use this to their advantage, basically, to more or less mislead you into thinking it's better than it is. But their actual testing methodology, they took readings from a group of people, both at rest and after 5 minutes on an exercise bike to get their heart rate up, using both a watch and a 12-point ECG, which is the full shebang, all the bells and whistles, really unwieldy. So they had 545 subjects who completed one or both readings. 12 of them missed one or both. They do specify that some people weren't considered like fit. And obviously, if you've got a heart condition that can be exacerbated by exercise, it's a bit unethical to force them to then exacerbate their illness for you, which gave them a total of 1,073 results, which they collate together and they compare them to that traditional wired ECG. And then they calculate the sensitivity and specificity. Now, I want to prep you. The next slide has a lot of numbers on it, but we'll get through it together, I promise. And then there'll be a picture of my cat. So just think about the cat. I'm so sorry. The worst part is it's not even all the numbers. There's another column here that talks about confidence intervals, but it was like mostly dead space, so I had to nix it. So this is the slide with all the numbers on it. So table 6 here on the left shows the results of the watch versus the 12-lead ECG, which, as you can see, for the most part, it did all right. It, like, not perfect, mind you, but, like, in the majority of the time, it got it right. So basically, like, you can see the left-hand column is the watch results, and the rows at the top, the comps, I got it the wrong way around. Can you tell it's been a while since they did statistics? But the ones at the top are the ECG, so it's a little difficult to read, but I feel like they did that on purpose. The main thing I wanted to point out here is that the numbers that Apple kind of leave out of their calculations here in table 7, where they calculate sensitivity and specificity. So you can see that they've only counted the results where the watch says that it was sinus rhythm or atrial fibrillation. But you can see that the doctors they had who interpreted the 12-point ECG, they identified other arrhythmias because some of the participants had other arrhythmias. And the watch can't do that. The watch has an inconclusive category. And that's not the same as you're fine, it's I don't know, which is still an incorrect answer. Like it's, you know, if you're counting the either it's correct or it's not, that should be counted in the not, because it, the way it's worded on the app, it's very much like, if you keep getting this or you feel sick, go to a doctor, which is very helpful. So they only count those two specific things, but that's on purpose, because that's what sensitivity and specificity are. They're not measures of precision, which is what you would expect looking at this data without that context, but it's only how many explicitly incorrect answers the machine gives. So it's not wrong to equate the measurements with efficacy, because they are a measurement of efficacy, but it does kind of muddy the waters in a way that makes Apple look better, because it kind of hides those not explicitly incorrect, but implicitly, because, you know, back in school, if you say, I don't know, to a question, I still got zero, just like if I got it wrong. So we, with this data, can actually work out how often was it correct versus incorrect. So for how many times it correctly identified atrial fibrillation, it did that 474 times out of a total of 517. Since we're discounting like not available, because if the watch didn't actually give a result, instead of saying poor recording, like I think it's unfair to count that, but poor recording in this case is, I don't know how to say it other than a hardware skill issue, because they had technicians on site during these tests to make sure that the watch was being worn correctly by the participants. So when it says poor result, that's stuff like sweat getting in the way during those after exercise numbers. So I'm counting those. I'm counting them, Apple. I see them. And that gives us a total of 517 results. And doing it as a fraction, we get 91.6%, which is a bit lower than 98.5. Like, yeah, it's not, it's still above their 90% bound, right? But it doesn't sound as good in the advertising, does it? So doing the same again with the specificity gives us 436 correct answers out of a total of 463, which is 94.1%. And again, that's not bad. It's still above their 92% bound. I tried to estimate their confidence intervals, but again, they don't say how they did it past the technique they used. So they don't say how many times they resampled the group or how many samples they took during their resampling to calculate their confidence intervals. So I could only really guesstimate the intervals. But even when I did, those numbers are just above. So like it still functionally works the way that they want it to, but it doesn't look as good in advertising. And they put these numbers on the site. They say it's, you know, 99% specificity. And that sounds great. 94%? Doesn't sound as good. But there's one measurement they didn't calculate so that they didn't have to tell you. And that's how often the watch can recognize other arrhythmias, since, you know, this watch here is advertised as being able to detect arrhythmias plural. So 69, nice, 12-point ECGs showed a non-AFib arrhythmia, or a serious heart rate problem, which is, I think there's actually a typo on the table 6 there. I think it's meant to say heart rate below 50 or above 150, which are both talk to a doctor territory. And of the 68 corresponding watch results for those ECGs, only 37 of them flagged to the user, hey, you have an arrhythmia. Because again, the inconclusive does not say that you have an arrhythmia. It just says it can't tell. And that gives you 37 of 68. That's 54.4%, which is just terrifying. Because, and that's basically what this whole presentation is about. That if you only measure what makes your product look good, then the research will only show that your product is good. And it's not lying by omission, because obviously the numbers are there, you can look at them yourself, but it's kind of not twisting the truth, but kind of just tilting it a little bit. to make them look better. But the thing is that companies are encouraged to do shit like this under capitalism, because it keeps them competitive. You know, sponsoring studies that make their products look good is a good thing. Hell, the sugar industry back in the 60s and 70s sponsored all the studies to say that it was fat that made you fat and not sugar. And then they actually look at the research later and it's like, oh, it was the opposite. Okay. So I wanted to leave you all this little tidbit right from Apple's website on how to take an ECG using the Watch app. And specifically where it says, quote, real world use of the ECG app may result in a greater number of strips being deemed inconclusive and not classifiable. And that means that since we've now looked at the data and we've done our own maths here, it's got like a 10% chance of just being wrong all the time. And that's if you're someone with like either a healthy heart or one very specific heart issue. And obviously people don't fit into specific categories like that. So it's probably gonna be even worse. And also, I don't know how 545 rounds to 600. I would round it to 550, or if we're doing one significant figure, 500. I can only explain that as Apple loves to oversell things. And if any of you work for Apple, my price for never ever talking about this ever again is one of the new like iPhone 14 Pro Maxes in purple. I have no scruples. So, any questions? And as promised, this is my cat. Her name is Brambles. She helps us fix tech sometimes. I am not a statistician. I have no medical training, but I will help. I will try my best to answer anything if anyone has any questions.
How soft is Brambles?
Very. She's very soft, especially when she stands on me in the middle of the night because she wants attention. Do we have any other questions? Yeah.
You said that it was is it FDA approved?
Yes.
Did they approve it only for AFib or?
So they approved it as. I'd have to look it up. They approved it as a new device that doesn't do something that another device does. And I can't remember specifically. I don't think I found the specific FDA thing. But I believe it is specifically just for atrial fibrillation.
Is there an equivalent classification kind of approval for the UK
side? That's a good question. I imagine so, because it's a medical device. But unfortunately, their press release did not mention it because America. That is actually something to look into. I imagine so, but I imagine that it's probably a similar thing in the EU to the FDA in the US, where they probably used the same data. But thank you, that's an interesting question. Anyone else? Or are we good to go?
How much is Brambles eating a day?
Like, it depends. Sometimes she's not very hungry, but like, that much of a bowl a couple times a day.
Do you have more pictures of Brambles?
No. You should have put them in your talk instead. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, everyone. I hope you learned something, or at the very least got more mad at Apple than you already were.